This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And welcome back to an episode of the Cooler Jets podcast. We're your host, Ben Blessington and Michael Nania. Back with another positional breakdown. Today, we're taking a look at the offensive line. On Monday, we'll be dropping our episode on the quarterback position, talking a lot about Zach Wilson, maybe a little James Morgan and Mike White in there as well. So you don't want to miss that. And then on Thursday, we'll be dropping our training camp preview as the Jets will be getting their training camp underway next week. So a lot happening. Stay tuned. Michael, let's talk about this offensive line. Before we hop into the individual players and some questions for the unit as a whole, how happy are you with this group? Joe Douglas has invested a lot in this unit over his time period as general manager, a lot this offseason. And also, I think some of the changes on the coaching staff and scheme wise are definitely going to benefit this unit. So how happy are you with this unit heading into 2021?
Yeah, I think the Jets did a really nice job with this group this offseason. The rebuild did kind of get started off on the wrong foot with how free agency began. They weren't able to get Joe Tooney, Corey Linsley, Brandon Scherff was tagged. So a lot of those guys you wanted to spend that cap space on, who would have been substantial, obvious upgrades, were immediately off the board. So they were put in a tough spot because of that, but they found their footing. The Vera Tucker trade was aggressive towards filling a position of need. And then picking up Morgan Moses later on was an awesome late offseason addition just to raise the floor of the unit, add depth, and improve the overall talent level. And now you go into 2021 with a unit that has a lot of potential, and it obviously kind of all starts with Mekhi Becton on that left side because he has so much potential. There really is no limit to how good he can be. It is conceivable that he can be a top five left tackle, maybe the best in the league at some point down the line. But obviously for him, it all comes down to health. But overall, the unit, I think they did a nice job kind of finding their footing after things didn't start out too well in free agency. But I'm going to be looking at Becton and his potential. And for him, that is definitely going to come down to whether he can stay durable.
I mean, definitely. I think the potential is certainly there. That's the reason he was drafted. And, you know, even though he only missed two full games last year, it was clear that the entire season he was managing his pain. And now, especially with the diagnosis of plantar fasciitis in one of his feet, you know, that's certainly going to be something he's going to be dealing with again this season. And, you know, if he's struggling to manage pain, maybe he looks at, you know, alternative medicine like CBD. And speaking of CBD, our friends at Candid, was that too obvious, Michael? Our friends at Candidip CBD, the nation's leading tobacco and nicotine-free dip alternative with CBD, are excited to present the game of the year. Yeah, we're sellouts. Just let us read this. Candidip CBD is a fast-acting and innovative way to consume CBD that works and tastes great and won't make you play sneak-a-chew with the wife during football season. All right. The game of the year is one winner chosen by August 31st. Entry is easy. Head to CandidipCBD.com and click the link or visit Candidip's main Instagram and look for the blue check mark. One winner will be chosen and can bring a plus one to any regular season NFL game, airfare for two with luxury hotel lodging, and great seats for the game. That's right. Candidip's is randomly choosing one lucky winner for the fan experience of a lifetime. So head to CandidipCBD.com and enter or go to the official at Candidip's Instagram and type it all the way to find the blue check account. So yeah, go see Zach Wilson take on Sam Darnold week one. Just go to CandidipsCBD.com. Yeah, Michael and I totally planned that Mekhi Becton line. We thought it was kind of funny, but we actually do have a podcast to do here. This is not just one giant ad. I guess we should just start with Becton because he is the superstar of this offensive line. And although that was a bit of a joke, it is serious that his health is the top issue for him right now, because that potential is certainly there. And I think last year heading into the season, we were a little concerned about his floor. Maybe it was, you know, he's super raw. How is he going to be in the pass game? And there was clearly just some question marks about how good he was going to be as a rookie, because we knew his ceiling was high, but it was like, is he going to be a guy that's going to take a year or two to develop? And that just wasn't the case. I mean, from the start of the season, he was great. And honestly, if he wasn't injured the entire year, he may have been even better. The fact that he played that well while battling through that many injuries is certainly a positive sign, even if he does need to drop some weight and figure that whole situation out. I don't think Becton could have had much of a better rookie season. Michael, can you just put into perspective how good he was as a rookie?
Yeah, I think he had a really good season, not just for a rookie by rookie standards. I think he was still probably a borderline top 10 left tackle in that 10 to 14 range, probably. He definitely wasn't elite yet, I don't think, because in pass protection, there were a couple games where the opponent had his number against the Raiders. He kind of had some trouble with Max Crosby and then with Myles Garrett against the Browns. So there were a couple games like that. And if you are going to be elite, you have to be able to have that consistency every week of the season, because that's how good some of the best tackles in the league are. They just don't have those games. So he wasn't quite at that level yet, but he was still really good. And especially in the run game, you know, a lot of difference making blocks. And it's not just the highlight reel, you know, knocking defenders on the ground at the second level, kind of stuff like that. And that's awesome. That's a big part of why he's great, but it was just the consistency in the run game. He didn't really have games where he struggled against the run. And even just the dirty working stuff, just clearing out the edge, sealing guys on the backside, simple stuff like that, he did a really good job with. So he's a very good player as a rookie, but there's still plenty of room for him to grow. And I did mention the pass protection as kind of what held him back, but he's still really good in that area too. In most games, he was a plus in pass protection. There was just a couple of games where, you know, he did struggle and the other guy had his number who he's blocking for the majority of that game. Like I mentioned, Crosby and Garrett, but in most games he was doing very well. And he's also very good with his help in pass protection. When he doesn't have a man, he makes his way to the inside and he just flattens people, completely takes them out of the play. And he did that very consistently, and that's a big part of pass protection as well, in addition to the one-on-one aspect of it. So I would say he is probably like a top 10 run blocker and probably an average pass blocker for a left tackle. And for a 21-year-old rookie who was a guy who most people thought was a project, you know, had great size, great athleticism, great tools, but probably would have to adjust a little bit coming out of that Louisville offense that, you know, had a lot of motion, a lot of play action, made things a little bit easier in the O-line. A guy who you thought was going to be, who's going to take his time to develop and fulfill that potential. And he came right in and was already good. So going forward, he's still only 22, still has all those tools, still has all that room to grow. And he's already shown you a floor of being a good player. It's extremely exciting to see what he can do. Obviously, it just comes down to whether he could stay healthy, because last season he only missed 2 games, but I believe he only had 9 out of the 14 he played where he didn't miss a single snap. So that's really problematic. It wasn't just the games he missed. He was in and out of games. He was questionable going into games. So obviously the health is important, yeah. But from an on-field perspective, there was a lot to love.
Yeah, and just like you mentioned, because he wasn't able to complete games and he was going out for series at a time and plays at a time, that affects the entire offensive line, because the Jets were constantly dealing with new players at that offensive line spot, at that left tackle position, probably the most important position of the line, constantly plugging in George Fant, plugging in Chuma Adoga, Connor McDermott. And it just didn't really allow for the offensive line to garner much chemistry. Obviously that was an issue throughout the entire offensive line, but when your left tackle is constantly out of the game, it's just hard to get in any sort of rhythm. But like you said, I mean, Becton's an amazing player and he would fit well in any scheme, any offensive line scheme. But I think in this John Benton, Michael Floor scheme in particular, he's going to have a lot of success. You look at what John Benton did with one of the best left tackles in the league, if not the best left tackle in Trent Williams. Last year, I think Andrew Golden wrote a great article at Jets Tech Factor about how the Jets can weaponize Mekhi Becton, use him as an offensive weapon, which you don't really hear much for an offensive lineman. The Jets can get Mekhi Becton out in space, like you mentioned, get to the second level, and just completely open up running lanes. And obviously, I think the biggest thing that was surprising to me was how good he was as a pass protector last year. Obviously, he had some games, you know, against Myles Garrett where he gave up a few sacks or whatnot. But by and large, for the most part, edge defenders couldn't get around him. I mean, he was flat out better than what I expected. And, you know, the entire 2020 Jets team was probably worse than I expected in every facet except for Quinnen Williams and Mekhi Becton. Both those guys played much better than I thought they would, and I had high expectations for both of them. So really excited to watch his development. But like you said, he's got to watch the weight. He's got to stay on the field. And if he does, there's no reason why he can't be the best left tackle in all of football. You know, Tristan Wirfs, right tackle, and Jedrick Wills, left tackle, both had good rookie seasons, but none of them have the ceiling that Mekhi Becton has. So really excited to watch him develop, especially in this scheme. And a big thing that's going to help him is the guy who gets to play alongside him, and Elijah Vera Tucker. And I think that to me was maybe my favorite moment of Joe Douglas's tenure, because I think we had this preconceived notion going into the draft, honestly, just going into the offseason as a whole, that based off the 2020 offseason, that Joe Douglas is a really frugal, measured GM. He's not going to take many chances. He's going to build this the slow way. And those are, for the most part, true. I mean, he draws his line in the sand. He's a very measured thinker. He doesn't rush into anything. But he showed that he's going to take chances when he thinks it's worth it. You know, he's not going to be a GM that's just going to sit on his hands his entire tenure. He's going to be a guy who goes out and gets it when he likes something, especially when you have 22 picks in the next two drafts. Not all those guys can make the roster. Might as well, you know, the benefit to having all those picks is that you can move up and get a guy you really love. And when you saw in the Flight 2021 doc that the Jets releases, Elijah Vera Tucker was one of the Jets' favorite players, if not Joe Douglas's favorite offensive lineman. You know, I guess maybe Sewell would be number one, but Vera Tucker is certainly a blue chip prospect for him, and a guy that I know Joe Douglas was excited and ecstatic to land. And especially since you get to pair him next to Mekhi Becton. I mean, you look what the Seahawks did, you know, with Walter Jones and the blocking they were able to create for Sean Alexander. That's what the Jets can do with Mekhi Becton and Vera Tucker. Those running lanes are going to be prevalent for whoever's back there. And Zach Wilson's complete blind side, not just his left tackle, is going to be secure. The unit as a whole is going to function a lot better if the left side is secure, because that allows Connor McGovern to maybe at times focus more on the right side of things. I mean, it just has a ripple effect across the entire offensive line. Both Becton and Vera Tucker, and McGovern for that matter, are going to get better from this. But here's a question for you, Mike. Is it fair to expect a Becton-like rookie season for Vera Tucker? Whereas going into last year, I think you and I were both like, hey, look, it's a rookie offensive lineman. He's going to take his lumps. He might not be great year one. You're just looking to see some great moments and maybe some consistency down the line, and then you can project him to have a much better second season. But when Becton hit the ball out of the park, along with two other great rookie offensive linemen last year, although they were tackles, Vera Tucker's a guard, he's going to be working in the interior, a little different of a situation. Is it fair to expect a you know, out of the gates, you know, Pro Bowl type season, or damn near close to it, a great season from Vera Tucker? Or is it more apt to say that, look, he's going to struggle, you're just looking to see that development?
It's really interesting because, you know, like I sort of talked about, Becton was not that guy. We were going to be totally okay if he was, you know, even bad as a rookie. Just if there were some flashes, you would be able to accept if, okay, he struggles as a rookie, he's got to work on his technique, and he'll come into his own with time, but we see the physical dominance. We would have been okay with that sort of season, but he didn't do that. And Vera Tucker is kind of the opposite prospect. He definitely has plenty of physical upside in his own right, obviously not to Becton's extent, but he's a guy who has the technique and the fundamentals and just a proven track record of production at multiple positions to where he does seem like a high floor guy. It's kind of hard to picture him not being good because he has so many finer points of his game already very refined as he comes into the league. Vera Tucker does seem like the prospect who has a great chance of playing well right away. But, you know, the thing is that the narratives don't always play out exactly as you expect them to, with Becton being an example, a guy who you thought was a developmental, long-term guy, young, tools, all that stuff. He's going to struggle and it'll take him time. And then the opposite happens with him. And then I think with the one rookie tackle of the top four in the first round who struggled was Andrew Thomas with the Giants. He was the first one taken of the group, and I think he was largely seen as that kind of high-floor guy who should have a good chance of succeeding.
and he was by far the worst, and he was pretty bad. So that's the thing. Vera Tucker definitely seems like that, but you never know how things are going to play out. Weird things happen in sports. It's not always as the way things play out isn't always as similar to how you expect them to. But with that being said, I do think Vera Tucker has a good chance to be at least a good starter in his rookie season. And he is 1 year ahead of Becton as well. But I think that's the important thing. We're going to keep comparing him to Becton because that's who, as Jets fans, we saw here. He's the one guy we pay attention to last season. So we're saying, okay, if Becton can do it, Vera Tucker's definitely going to do it. It doesn't always work like that, just comparing to one other guy who's in the same situation. He might not be good. It's definitely possible. But I do think he, without a doubt, has a good chance just because of how good he is technically in so many areas with his hands, the way he frames guys, his feet. He has the athleticism that's necessary in the scheme. So he's a good scheme fit. That's important too. So I think he does have a good chance of succeeding right away, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think he's going to be good as a rookie. I think that one, Joe Douglas knows his offensive line. And I think that was kind of his MO, is that not only is he a super high floor guy, but he's a guy that has a tremendously high ceiling. I mean, a lot of people have come out and said that this guy is a future Pro Bowler and that the Jets got a bona fide stud. And I think that, you know, it was clear that Joe Douglas had some sort of framework for a trade with Minnesota, but it wouldn't have surprised me if Vera Tucker went sooner than that. I think he is a, you know, the expectations that he's going to come out and be good as a rookie, maybe that's a little unfair because he's coming in and Becton had such a good rookie year. And look, Vera Tucker even played left tackle last year, so he didn't even play. He hasn't played left guard in 2 years now. And well, he played a little bit, but I think he certainly projects better as a left guard. And he showed that his first few years of college. I think that, you know, there are some question marks. It's like, okay, well, like, he was also in the Pac-12, and certainly, I mean, like, Sewell is also another Pac-12 offensive lineman. There have been plenty of good Pac-12 offensive linemen as rookies, but it's like, would you feel more comfortable if he was a guy coming from a Big Ten school or an SEC school or something like that? Those are like nitpicky things that you could maybe find issues with. But I think for the most part, if he stays healthy, Vera Tucker should be very good. I think it also helps him that he's playing next to Becton, and he's also playing next to a veteran in Connor McGovern. I think that's going to help his transition to the league. I'm certain that, you know, there are benefits and weaknesses benefits and cons to being on the interior. One, I guess he's not going to be relied as much to have those one-on-ones that Becton at left tackle was going to have. But being in the interior, Vera Tucker is going to face some of the strongest men in the entire league. And that is generally, you know, more so for interior defensive linemen, but the same goes for interior offensive linemen at times, is that that's where it takes a year to develop, to get used to that NFL strength. I think for an offensive lineman, it's a little easier. He has a good left tackle and a veteran center next to him. So I anticipate Vera Tucker to be quite good as a rookie. I think him and Becton are going to open up some massive running lanes for the Jets. I think that's something they can really utilize. I also love his athleticism. You can pull him a lot. You can have a lot of fun with both him and Becton. You can put him out in space. They're both perfect scheme fits. I mean, that's the other thing, is Vera Tucker, there were some good offensive linemen, you know, that the Jets could have maybe waited and taken in the second round or even in the third round, but there weren't many that were as good. There, I don't think there even was a single one that was as good as Vera Tucker and as good of a scheme fit as he is, especially at that left guard spot, which was such a need for the Jets. But speaking of the veteran that's going to be on the right side of him, Connor McGovern was a guy that you and I, Michael, were both excited about. I thought he was a good free agent signing for the Jets in 2020. You know, he was coming off a great 2019 season with the Broncos, and the Jets have had, you know, before 2017, a great history of center play. I mean, going from Kevin White and Nick Mangold, the last two decades, the Jets have had great center play, and it's carried their offensive line and their run game as a whole. And so McGovern was a sign that, okay, the Jets are investing back in this position. You know, maybe he's not Kevin White or Nick Mangold, but this is a very good center. But he struggled last year. And do you think that was more so, look, he didn't have a training camp. There was an all new offensive line. The chemistry was hard. It was, you know, a challenging scheme, maybe. It seemed like some of the things he was great at in 2019, he struggled with in 2020. So what were your thoughts on Connor McGovern's 2020 season? And does it give you any hope heading into 2021 that he can turn things around?
Well, I think the biggest thing on an overall level is that he's not a bad player. Even the way he played last season, he's not bad. There are some aspects of his PFF grade that weren't great. It's easy to look it up and say that he was really bad. And there were some games where he did really struggle, but I think he definitely is underrated by his PFF grade, because I think they knocked his pass protection a little bit too much. He gave up a lot of pressure, but a lot of it wasn't entirely his fault. He was giving up stunts, blitz pickups, things like that, in which he definitely needed to do a better job. He's great at those things with the Broncos in 2019, just recognition, awareness, pickups, all that stuff. He was really good at, and he definitely was not as good this past season. He needs to be better at that. And you could blame the guys next to him as much as you want. He did struggle in that area and he needs to get better. But with that being said, he did kind of get put in the spotlight for giving up pressures, which knocked his grade down and kind of made him pop off the screen a little bit more as a fan watching for struggling. He had a lot of plays like that where it wasn't entirely his fault, whether it was Alex Lewis, Greg Van Roten, whoever was playing next to him, Pat Elflein, Josh Andrews near the end of the season. Those guys were contributing to making him look bad, not passing off a stunt correctly, not picking up a blitz when they should have, and making McGovern have to come over and pick it up late when it shouldn't even actually be his man, stuff like that. So I think there's a combination of things in the passing game. Yes, he needs to be better, but he also was kind of hung out to dry a little bit by the guys next to him. And you could feel confident that he is going to get better, because it wouldn't just be magical improvement. He was good in very good as a pass protector in 2019 with the Broncos, especially at the mental aspect of the game, which is where most of his issues were last season. And one-on-one pass protection, he was still pretty good last year. It was just the pickups. So he does have to get better, but I think a lot of his struggles were overblown a little bit because it wasn't all his fault. But in the run game, exactly. I think he was really good last season in the run game. He's not necessarily an enforcing run blocker, but he's a perfect fit for the scheme with his athleticism. He's a great reach blocker, being able to get over to the guy next to him, whether that's the three technique or the two eye technique, just getting lateral along the line of scrimmage and picking up that guy to the outside of him, getting his hips around him, sealing him to the backside. He's very good at that. Very quick off the line. And obviously, as the guy snapping the ball, you should be able to get off the ball quickly. But not all centers have that athleticism. We've seen plenty of unathletic centers on this team in recent years. And McGovern is not like that. He's a very good mover, has smooth hips, gets off the ball quickly, lateral quickness, all that stuff. He's not the best run blocker in the league because, like I said, he's not necessarily an enforcing guy in terms of power. And I think getting vertically to the second level, he's not that great at framing and picking guys up, but moving laterally down the line of scrimmage, he's really good, and that's what this offense is going to be built around. So another guy who is a really good scheme fit. So overall with McGovern, I think you should feel comfortable that you're getting an average center at worst, maybe a little bit below average if he doesn't improve his pass protection. But if he can get his pass protection back to where it was in 2019, specifically the mental part of the game, picking up blitzes, passing off and picking up stunts, things like that, he does have top 10 center ability. That's where he was for the Broncos. And he obviously fell off from that, but he can get back there. But I think at the worst, you're getting an average center who's good in the run game, specifically with outside runs, and not good in pass protection because of those awareness issues, but at least one-on-one protection still good in that area. So yeah. I am a Connor McGovern fan. I think he's more of a positive than a negative for this line in this scheme, especially.
Definitely. I think that the encouraging part of things is that he was good on the mental side in 2019. And then his physical side this year was definitely not bad. And look, he was playing alongside, like you said, a bunch of bums. And there was a new offensive line, a different scheme for him, guys who didn't have a training camp together. So you'd have to imagine that those mental lapses will be fewer and far between this year, just because he's played to get next to Van Roten. I think Vera Tucker is an upgrade from Alex Lewis. I think this scheme, like you said, fits him excellently. Excellent. And I think the other thing to keep in mind, you kind of mentioned a little bit, is that the Jets could have went out and signed Corey Linsley in the offseason. I mean, now look, maybe he would have chose the Chargers anyways. But they weren't even interested. They didn't even call Corey Linsley. And that was a guy that a lot of people thought the Jets would go after because he was great in Green Bay under Michael Fuller's brother. And the Jets didn't even call him. So that, and they didn't even look at a center in the draft as well. So I think that.
Right. And to add to that point, I think the center position was really strong in free agency. There were not a lot of guards. There are not a lot of good guards available, but the Jets did want to improve the line. There were a lot of decent centers like David Andrews is an example of one. There were plenty of good centers, so they could have signed
David Andrews was just in the chamber and nothing else.
No, I'm telling you, the names aren't coming to mind. A bunch of good centers. So they could have gone with one of those options, move McGovern over to guard. But I think your point is a good one. Wanted McGovern to stick there at center.
Alex Mack, Ted Karras.
Yeah, there you go.
Matt Skura. Yeah,
that's another one I was thinking of, Ted Karras. So yeah, there were some decent centers.
Yeah. So I think clearly when Sal's coaching staff sat down with the personnel department and they went over each player and were trying to, think of their role in the team, if they want him on this team, I think McGovern was a guy that they certainly like his fit in this offense. And, he was going to be on the roster probably no matter what. He was the only free agent, I believe, that they signed last year that had any sort of guarantees into this season. And they kept him around. Obviously, he was going to stick around, but there was thoughts that maybe they could bump him to guard. They clearly like his fit at center. We'll see how it works out. But I like his projection a lot more this season. I think he will have a bit of a bounce back season. Even if he wasn't awful last year, I think you're going to see much better center play from the Jets. Now, it seems like the Jets' offensive line goes from best to worst, and it goes left to right. Well, maybe not completely, but once you get to that right side, because I think a right tackle is better than a right guard. But once you get to the right side of that offensive line, I think that's where some question marks pop up, mostly at that guard spot. And Greg Van Roden, he's the one piece of this offensive line that I'm not legitimately excited about. However, there's been some chatter that this scheme fits him better. And he wasn't god awful last year. He certainly had his moments, his peaks and valleys. I guess put his 2020 season into perspective. How bad was it? And do you think this scheme is going to fit him a lot better than Adam Gase's inside zone blocking scheme was?
I honestly do think Van Roden is pretty underrated. And that's not me saying he's good, but I think he kind of gets lumped in with a lot of the, absolute bums the Jets have had in their offensive line. Like Pat Elfein, Josh Andrews last season, terrible. You can bash those guys all you want. They're horrible. Alex Lewis, not quite their level, but I think even he is probably below Van Roten, to me, at least in my opinion. I'm not saying Van Roten's good. He's below average, but I think if he's the Jets' starting right guard, I think he's better than probably 10 other starting right guards in the league, which isn't a ringing endorsement or anything like that. But I'm just saying, I don't think he's the worst starter on an offensive line in the league, because that's what he's probably going to be. Unless Vera Tucker really struggles as a rookie, Van Roten is going to be your worst starter, assuming he does start at right guard and not someone else. And I think you could do a lot worse having your weakest link on your line being the, 20th to 24th or so best starter at his position in the league. So I don't think he's good, but I also don't think he's as bad as a lot of people think he is to start last season. And that's kind of the thing. I think the totality of a season last year was kind of that, but it was also sectioned a little bit to start last season. The first few games, he was that bad. He allowed, I believe, the first five games of the season, the most pressures among guards. But then from that point on, he was pretty solid in pass protection, allowed very low pressure numbers. And that helped save him from a really bad start to the season. So I guess maybe fans kind of remembered that stretch in the beginning of the season a little bit, against the Bills, the Colts, Broncos, Niners, those first few games, and then kind of didn't give him a chance to fix it over the rest of the year because he was able to do that. So I don't think Van Roten's good, but I do think this is another guy who should benefit from the scheme. He is a pretty athletic guy. His combine numbers aren't readily available, and he is in his 30s now, so it's hard to kind of gauge that in terms of concrete evidence, but you watch him play, he is a good athlete, and pulling was a big part of his game, which, is not a major aspect of a wide zone offense, but it is a testament to his athleticism. So I think this should benefit him pretty well. I'm not as bullish on it as, you know, some of the other guys, because like Vera Tucker, Becton, McGovern are great athletes. I don't think Van Roten is that, but it's a fairly good fit for him, I think. And just specifically in pass protection, he started off really badly last year, but he got better. So bottom line, Van Roten, I don't think he's terrible, but he's below average. And that, I think that's okay for the fifth best guy in your line.
Yeah. And look, if he's awful, the Jets do have some options.
Yeah.
And one of them includes the guy who's playing to his right, presumably, is Morgan Moses at right tackle. You've been a big proponent of maybe sliding Moses into right guard and then putting Fant at right tackle, because Fant in this scheme is a better fit at right tackle than Van Roten is a good fit at right guard. Even though they're both solid scheme fits, Fant would seem to fit the scheme to more of an extent than Van Roten. But Morgan Moses, out of the three of those guys, is probably the best player, and tackle's probably more important than guard. But you've expressed some sort of concern that maybe he's a little overhyped by Jets fans. There is a reason Washington cut him. It'll be a different system. He was a bit of a one-year wonder, but his last year, particularly in run blocking, was outstanding. I mean, he had a great season for Washington last year, and if he can bring anything that resembles that type of season to the Jets, you know, obviously we know that the left side of the line is secure. I, like you, am pretty confident in Connor McGovern having a bit of a bounce back season. Van Roten, you know, if he can just be okay, I'm good with that. But the right tackle to me is the biggest X factor of this line. Can Morgan Moses repeat from last year? And if he doesn't, are you looking at sliding him to right guard and Fant there? I mean, there's a lot of question marks, but do you think that Morgan Moses can repeat the type of season he had last year in this wide zone scheme?
Yeah, I just feel like Van Roten, I think, because of his grading, I believe he was the number five right tackle, five or six. I think that's overselling him a little bit. I don't think he did play quite that well, and it also is an outlier from the rest of his career, where he's typically been around average or a little bit above. So I guess best case scenario, he could fall in right between there, maybe borderline top 10. And if he falls in line with where most of his career has been, he's probably average or slightly above, which is still an upgrade over Fant and still the best this team has had in a very long time. So that's just where I am with him. I think he's not necessarily a superstar addition. If he was, Washington wouldn't have released him and there would be more demand for him and he would have made more money on the open market. But I think with all that being said, he's still a good player. And I do think in this scheme, he can play pretty well. I think it would be a better allocation of talent to move him inside, put Fan at right tackle. But he's still, even though Moses isn't a good athlete, his combine numbers, or at least on paper, his combine numbers weren't good 6-7 years ago. Now he's in his 30s. When you watch him, he doesn't look like as bad of an athlete as those numbers say. He did have a lot of really good plays in space. He's good at framing guys, because I think that's what's important. It's athleticism is great, but even if you're not the best athlete, if you could just target the right area on the field, anticipate where you need to be, and meet the defender at the right spot, then you can make a lot of good blocks in space, even if you're not the fastest guy. And I think he is pretty good at that. So I think still in this scheme, he should be pretty good in the run game. Yeah, I think Moses is an upgrade over Fant. It's great for depth purposes because Fant is a huge upgrade as a backup over Chuma Edoga or Connor McDermott. But I would keep expectations tempered a little bit. I don't think he's a top five guy, but he's still pretty good.
And then lastly, George Fant, who kind of got the short end of the stick here, because I think maybe it was 2 days before they signed Morgan Moses, I was reading an article on him on the Jets website, and he was talking about how the scheme was built for him and he's going to have a breakout season. He was so excited, and he's been kind of pushed a little bit to, you know, to the swing tackle six offensive line role, presumably, unless they do something with Moses at guard. But on this team, with the amount of injuries the Jets have faced on the offensive line the last few years, he will certainly be playing. And you and I talked about in the tight ends episode, there's a little confusion about this, how, you know, when the Jets go to 12 personnel, instead of maybe bringing in a second tight end, especially if there's an injury at that group, they could just use a six offensive lineman, not necessarily a tight end, but line them up against, you know, next to one of the tackles, have six offensive linemen in when they would otherwise be in 12 personnel, something like that. Just use more six offensive line sets. And I think Fant is perfect for that role because he can play right side, he can play left side. He's super athletic, so he can get out in space for you. You can use him a lot on poles and different traps. And, you know, he's definitely a benefit. And I would even go as far to say he's one of the best swing tackles in the league just for that role. Obviously, he was an okay right tackle, which was honestly a pretty good scenario for us heading into last year. I think there was a lot of fear that he was going to be god-awful, and he ended up, you know, he was a captain, and he ended up having an okay season, certainly not a great season or anything, but he's certainly a very good swing tackle. What type of role do you think he will have? I mean, how much can he affect this unit, and how excited are you to see him in those six offensive line sets?
I was really excited to see him start because I think he is right. The scheme is great for him, especially because, you know, if we're talking about running this offense through Becton and making him, you know, running to the left a lot, having him as the lead blocker, then I think that benefits Fant really well too, because I think the best of his work last season was as a backside blocker. When the run was going away from him, he did a really good job of keeping the backside edge defender out of the play, not giving him a chance to come from the backside and stop the play. That's what he was really good at. So I think that would complement, you know, running behind Becton really well. So I am a little disappointed we won't get to see Fant start, but it's almost a guarantee we'll see him start a game at some point. Between, I mean, Moses has been really durable, but you never know. He's into his 30s. And then with Becton, obviously, he has his questions, and really regardless of who you're talking about, what their track records are, injuries are pretty likely for every team. So we'll probably see him start at some point, but I do wonder how much they'll use him in that six offensive lineman role, throwing him on the field as, you know, that pseudo tight end, because I feel like it's something that you might, it's a situation where maybe you would prefer, instead of doing that, you just protect his health and value him as that backup tackle more so than what he could provide in that role. He did a good job in that role for the Seahawks, but you know, you've got a rookie quarterback, you really want to protect him. Do you want to risk the health of your backup tackle playing tight end as that sixth offensive lineman? Maybe it's not a risk they want to take. And then maybe from a personnel standpoint, you know, if you're running 12 personnel, you're putting out one running back, two tight ends, and only two wide receivers, and you're doing that a lot because you're putting Fan out there, then you're taking some snaps away from your wide receivers. And that's the strength of this offense, because when Fan was doing that with the Seahawks, they were a run heavy offense. And they, you know, they had good wide receivers, but they weren't deep at wide receiver. Like in 2019, they had Lockett, they had Metcalf, and that's about it at wide receiver. So they could run a lot of 12 personnel because you could take a third wide receiver off the field. You still got your two best guys out there. That third wide receiver isn't that good anyway. And then you put Fan in there and it could help your run game. From a Jets perspective, the entire strength of this offense is the wide receiver room. I would say it's pretty inarguable. You have five wide receivers who are better than any tight end or probably running back you have. So I think it might not be the best way to distribute your talent if you're taking away a lot of snaps from whether it's Denzel Mims, Crowder, Cole Moore, Corey Davis, whoever it is, and just to put Fant on the field or to put Herndon or Croft on the field if you're running a lot of 12 personnel, valuing putting tight ends out there. So I think it could be an 11 personnel heavy offense where you run a lot of just one back, one tight end, and three wide receivers. So I'm interested to see how, if they do decide to use Fant that role at all, because it's not something LaFleur and the 49ers did during his time there, but it is something he offers. Really interested to see what happens, but most of all, I am excited to, not that I want to see someone get injured, obviously I don't, but at some point he probably will get a chance to start, and I am interested to see how well the scheme does benefit him once he does.
And then rounding out the group, Chuma Adoga, Alex Lewis, Dan Feeney, Cameron Clark, those are probably your safest bets to make the roster. Next would be Corey Levin, Tristan Hoge, Grant Hermans, Jimmy Murray, and Tetton Saltes. How do you feel about the depth on this unit outside of George Fant?
I think that's definitely a question mark. And I think that's the biggest reason Morgan Moses is such a great addition, because now you have Fant as a part of this group. It looks a lot better. Before, you had Fant starting, no Moses. Then this was a big question mark. You know, Mekhi Becton or George Fant goes down. Two guys who have durability questions, then you've got to throw Chuma Edoga or Connor McDermott out there, which is what they did last season, and the results were awful. It's not a good spot to be in, but now you have Fant there. It looks a lot better. But the rest of these guys are definitely a question mark. Edoga is really bad. It's just flat out. There's not much to say there, especially his penalties. His frequency, his penalties in his career has been awful.
That's been a trait of Joe Douglas offensive linemen. You've noticed they've all brought in extremely low penalty numbers.
Yeah, that's definitely been like Greg Van Roten didn't have a penalty last year.
Right, except for Moses is the one guy they've signed that has some sort of, you know, he seems to have some issues with false starts. But between Connor McGovern, Van Roten, Vera Tucker, Becton, all those guys, even Alex Lewis to an extent, well, not as much Alex Lewis, but those guys that he's brought in the last 2 years have all been, for the most part, penalty free.
Yeah, it's definitely been a consistent part of what he's done. And Edoga obviously is a Mac guy, so it doesn't fit into that. Connor McDermott, he's pretty bad. Like some of the backups, it's not even to me worth getting into their specific strengths and weaknesses or anything, because they're backups for a reason. And when they've played for the Jets, like McDermott has had 3 starts for the past couple of years. Edoga started a few games, and it's just always a noticeable drop off when those guys come in, and they're just really big liabilities. So that is the question mark, the depth in this team. Then on the interior, Dan Feeney is going to be interesting because he did enough to start for the Chargers over the last 3 years, every single game, played a guard, then moved to center. But as a starter, he wasn't good. He gave up more pressures than any interior offensive lineman in the league over the last 3 years. But at the same time, now you have a backup who was a 16 game starter over the last 3 years, but he wasn't a good starter. So what are you getting out of him as a backup? Is he going to be better than most other backups are, or is he just going to come right in and be pretty bad like he was the last 3 years? So it'll be, but he's also another guy who should fit well into this scheme. He's a good athlete. I know you look at him, it doesn't really seem like that's the kind of game he plays, but athleticism actually is the crux of his game. The depth, though, in this unit is a question mark. But at the same time, I feel like it's hard for it not to be. I don't know how many teams look at their backup offensive line and be like, yeah, we're in really good shape. We have so many good backup offensive linemen on this team. It's just something you got to live with, and it's why health is so important for any position in football, but offensive line especially.
So let's hop into some questions about the unit as a whole. By the way, I agree with you on the depth side of things. The big X factor to many people is Cam Clark, a fourth rounder, and a Joe Douglas guy. A guy, you know, that was kind of the MO on Clark, at least to the middle of the season, was, okay, he's probably going to redshirt this season. But Joe Douglas knows his offensive lineman, especially his late-round offensive lineman. Clearly, Clark was going to be a project. You know, the fact that he didn't play at all, especially with the issues the Jets are having, not only on their offensive line, but specifically at that guard spot, certainly means he was pretty bad in practice last year and wasn't ready at all, but it's kind of what you expected taking a guy from Charlotte day three. They took him for, you know, the player that he could become. So he's a guy to keep an eye out for. But let's talk about this unit as a whole. I think the biggest impact, the biggest impact on this unit, the biggest change they've made was not anybody that they brought in as a player, rather who they brought in as a coach. John Benton going to implement, like we said, that wide zone scheme. He's also the running game coordinator coming over from San Francisco as their offensive line coach. Can you just talk about what he did for San Francisco the last few years and how much of an upgrade the Jets just made at that O-line position coach, which you can make an argument is the most important position coach across the league. You know, when you look at what the Patriots have been able to do with Scaramucci, what the Pittsburgh Steelers have been able to do with Mike Munchak, if you have a good offensive line coach and you're able to make it so that next man up mentality really does apply to your offensive line, that there's never really going to be complete disasters on that line, you know, the ceiling for your team goes way up, but the floor of your team is certainly much higher if you can just have an okay offensive line. And a lot of that is attributed to the offensive line coach.
Yeah, the offensive line coach has a lot of say in the collective technique of the offensive line, just the way they pick up stunts and blitzes and things, the way they drop back into their pass sets, use their hands. I've seen a lot of commentary about just the input that specific offensive line coaches will have in the way that their unit plays. So it is one of the more important position coaches, especially because it's one of the position groups that has the most connection and camaraderie between them. Obviously every position group does to an extent, but these are five guys playing every play right next to each other.
Well, they're five guys playing as one for the most
part. Yeah. So it's definitely, I think it is the most important position coach of them all. Except maybe the quarterback coach in terms of development, if you have a young guy, but other than that, offensive line is probably the one. And John Benn has done a really good job in San Francisco over the last 4 years. He helped them develop the reputation that they put together as a team that can run the ball really well, establish that play action game off of that run game. And it all started with the development he fostered there. And it wasn't like he had amazing talent there. And they did accumulate pretty good talent. But the year before he got there, the Niners did not have a good offensive line. The collective PFF grade of their offensive linemen in 2016 was fourth worst in the league. Then over the 4 years that Benton was there, their collective PFF grade of their offensive linemen was seventh best in the league. And the first year he was there, they instantly turned around from a bottom five sort of unit to a top 10 kind of unit, and they returned three of the same starters. And the two guys they added as starters weren't even high value adds. They added Tomlinson from Detroit, Lacken Tomlinson, who was pretty much a bust of a first round pick. And they added a veteran.
I forgot he was a first round pick.
In Brandon Fusco at the other guard spot. And they kept the other three guys and they turned around completely just with those two changes. So the Jets now, he's coming into a unit that was bad last year, but has a lot more talent than that group did that he went into. They have Becton, they have Vera Tucker, Moses McGovern. So if he can do this, you know, have this, forge the same sort of turnaround that he did over there with this talent that the Jets have, then there's a lot of potential for how far they can go. But the work he did with San Francisco is promising. I do think it is worth noting that, you know, the Jets had Frank Pollock as their offensive line coach, and he kind of came in with the same sort of resume in terms of doing a great job with offensive line development. So it doesn't always work out as much as you would hope.
Yeah, well, hey, Mekhi Becton looked pretty damn good for a rookie. So some of that has to, yeah, some credit has to go to Pollock.
And there's some credit to him for that too. So we'll see what happens. It's not always a lock that everything goes on the positive end of the spectrum, but John Benton definitely comes in with a good resume.
And I know you're not necessarily an offensive line expert, but what would you say are the biggest differences between the inside zone blocking scheme that Frank Pollock and Adam Gase were running last year to the wide zone offensive scheme that John Benton and Michael Floor are going to be running?
Yeah, like you said, I won't pretend to be an offensive line expert, especially offensive line. I feel like it's one of the most technical, really niche positions in the game, which you really have to dedicate to that specifically to know what's going on. But I do think in terms of the blocking scheme, just the most basic difference is that it's a lot more athleticism based. I think inside zone, even though it has zone in the name, like outside zone, inside zone is a lot more condensed, a lot more vertical. It really is just kind of a variant of, you know, power runs, inside runs. Whereas outside zone or wide zone, like the Jets will be running, presumably if they do what the Niners did, is, you know, a lot more lateral, horizontal, attacking the edges. So athleticism is going to be a lot more important because you want to be able to get off the ball, get down the line of scrimmage, reach guys, get around them. So I think, you know, at the most basic, it's definitely much less about power, more about athleticism. And the Jets have a lot of guys who fit that. So I think that's one of the biggest credits of the way that they built this unit is that they've really valued, at least with the moves they made this offseason, they've really valued scheme in terms of the way they built it. There are a lot of scheme fits like Dan Feeney. I don't love Dan Feeney, but this is a good scheme for him. And then obviously the most important, Elijah Vera Tucker, great scheme fit. Like it's still hard to believe they got him. It never seemed like he's going to be on the table 23. And obviously he wasn't, but the fact that they got aggressive and went up and got him is Say what you want about the value of it in terms of what they gave up, but he's a great fit in this scheme. He's just, in terms of his measurables in terms of his height, his weight, what he did in the three cone, the broad jump, all this stuff, is like dead on with what the 49ers had in their starting guards. So he's just made for this scheme. He's going to be a great fit. Like I said, McGovern, I think, is awesome for him as well. So I think the Jets have plenty of athleticism to run this offense effectively.
Is there anybody, I mean, I guess Moses is the obvious answer, but is there anybody in this offensive line that you're concerned about their fit in this scheme? Or do you think Joe Douglas has done a pretty good job meshing their scheme to the talent they already had and the talent they brought in?
Yeah, I would say Moses is probably the question mark. I still think he'll be good. I just don't think this offense is the best way to showcase his skill set, because I feel like in Washington, what he did best was, you know, down blocking, climbing to the second level, more of that inside stuff. But there are a lot of his best moments are pulling to the outside, getting to the second level. So I think he can still be good. It's just a little bit of a projection because we haven't necessarily seen him do it at as high of a volume as the Jets will be asking him to do it. So I would go with him. That's probably it, though. It's
Adoga?
The scheme fits here are
Lewis.
I mean, Lewis probably is. Yeah, I would say Lewis would be a concern. He's definitely more of a grittier
Clark
power sort of guy. Clark. Yeah, I guess maybe I'd throw Clark in there.
I mean, he's tackle experience, but he's more of a man power type of offensive lineman.
Yeah, so Clark really could be in trouble because of that. He's not a bad athlete, but it's definitely the most impressive aspect of his game is more so his strength and his power, more so than his movement skills. So I'd say Clark, Lewis, Moses, probably they come to mind first.
Clark is a really interesting guy to watch in training camp because he's the type of guy, if he has a great preseason, he could legitimately maybe not earn a start. Well, hell, he could earn a starting role this season, but I think that's probably a long shot, but he can legitimately earn himself a shot at the rotation and potentially, you know, becoming that second string offensive lineman that would end up playing if Van Roten or Vera Tucker were to go down. But he's also a guy, like you said, that I could see getting released. And, you know, I my instinct is to say that he won't get released because, like, he's a Joe Douglas offensive lineman. That seems that should be a protected class of citizen on this roster. He's a fourth round pick. He's only a year two player, and they thought he was going to be pretty raw. But look, it is a different coaching staff. If he was really that bad, I mean, in some respects, I would respect Joe Douglas for being like, all right, it didn't work. This guy's not good. I'm not going to hold on to him like McCagnan did with some players, you know, just to save face. You know, one of the first moves that Joe Douglas made, granted, it wasn't his own pick, but he cut Ja'Kai Polite. It's the second pick that the Jets had that year, and he cut him right off the bat, which was a big surprise. Because it was like, well, even if he's bad or he's not good in the locker room, you know, this talent is still there. Maybe they should hang on to him, given the Jets' issues at rushing the passer. Maybe, well, I was going to say maybe you could argue that wasn't the best move. But at the same time, Polite hasn't panned out. He clearly was not a great influence in the locker room. Joe Douglas was willing to cut ties that you know, that soon. Clark is a very different situation, an offensive lineman, a guy he took. But if he's not playing well, if he was really that bad in practice last year and he's not a good scheme fit, he's definitely got to keep an eye out for. He's a really interesting guy to watch in those preseason games because we haven't seen him at all. So that'll be a good time for us to see where he's at in terms of his development. Another thing to consider is, you know, the way you've laid things out, Michael, I would say that this offensive line is probably the best the Jets have had in a long time. That is a good point. When was the last offensive line that you thought was better than this current unit just heading into the season?
Yeah, I don't even know if I could remember in recent memory.
Well, okay,
I
mean, we know they're not better than 2010.
Yeah.
So we can start there. 2011 had a brutal season of Wayne Hunter at right tackle. I don't know if you remember that at all.
Yeah.
That was like, but they still had Ferguson and Mangold. You know, 2012, they were pretty bad.
When was the last year of Mangold and Brick together? Was it 2016?
16, Mango was there, but I think was Clady?
Wasn't 2015?
Clady.
Yeah, 2015 was Ferguson's last year.
Yeah, because Ryan Clady was the left tackle.
And I think he was actually not that good at the end, his last season. So I don't know.
2013 maybe? Well, but the unit as a whole, I think 2013 because Winters – Winters, 2015, they were actually all right because Brian Winters had a pretty good season.
They had a good run game that season. They were one of the top run games. Actually, the pass, like Fitzpatrick did not get sacked that much that year. And sacks, that's on him because he gets the ball out really quick. He's aggressive, but it was still a pretty good pass block. 2015 is probably the last time they had a respectable offensive line.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that at the very least, you can say that this offensive line is a competent unit, a unit to be excited about, a unit that should be raising the overall play of the entire team. But when you look at some of the defensive line and pass rushing matchups that they're going to have to go up against, who are some of the units that scare you on the schedule?
I think they did actually kind of get fortunate with a fairly easy schedule of opposing defensive lines. But I think, like, we talked about this in our schedule breakdown, I think a while ago. I think the biggest determining factor in how difficult an opponent is going to be for the Jets this season is the quality of their pass rush. Because if the Jets offensive line is going to struggle, then I think then it's going to be tough for them to get some offense going, because you want to protect your rookie quarterback. If he's protected, then the physical skills can shine, and he doesn't have to think as quickly and have as much, you know, second guessing and doubting. And we've seen that with some of the young quarterbacks we've had, because every quarterback in the NFL is physical ability. Even if you're a rookie quarterback, you're on the same level in terms of talent as the rest of the guys in the league, even the veterans. It's just, you need the time to get the mental aspect of it down, and the experience and the decision-making, things like that. But if your protection is good and you're able to have the time to just allow your physical abilities to be showcased, and the rest of those weaknesses can be neutralized by the pass protection playing well, then you can really thrive. And I think that Zach Wilson can do that this year. So offensive line will be huge, but the toughest defensive lines on their schedule, I think the Eagles, the Broncos, the Saints are probably the toughest ones on the schedule, but there are some other good ones. Miami has a pretty good front, New England, but it's overall not a really hard schedule of opposing defensive lines. I would say Denver, Philly, and New Orleans are probably the toughest ones.
Yeah, but overall, I feel like this unit, you know, I think sometimes any fan base can be victim of overrating their players and being maybe a little bit too optimistic. But I think Becton gives you all the reasons in the world to be optimistic about him if he can stay healthy. I think Vera Tucker as well fits into that boat, that he's a guy that should be an immediate plug and play. Good left guard. I think McGovern, maybe there's some projection there, but he was pretty good in 2019, and there's plenty of reasons to believe that he's going to be good again. Van Roden, Moses, and Fant maybe are the guys that maybe could lead to this unit's downfall if they really aren't that great. But I think it's fair to expect legitimate improvement from this unit. How good do you think they will be? I mean, in terms of their run blocking, their pass blocking, and their overall grade among other NFL teams.
Well, I'll reference a ranking I made of all the offensive lines in the league on paper right now, starting fives. I just took every starter in the league on all 32 teams, took their PFF grade, their overall PFF grade from last season, and just averaged them out and ranked everybody. And for rookies, I just took the average performance of rookies at the same position taken in the same round in recent years. So doing that, which is, you know, an unbiased way of doing it, the Jets fared pretty well. Their run blocking, so this is the collective five starters: Becton, Vera Tucker with placeholder rookie numbers, McGovern, Van Roten, and Moses is the group I went with. So the Jets in run blocking came out at eighth best. Their pass blocking came out at 19th, and overall they landed at 15th. So I don't think that's unrealistic. If everyone stays healthy, then I definitely think they'll be better in the run game than pass protection. But overall, that is, I could definitely see that happening, about league average, but good in the run game, a little bit below average in the passing game. I could absolutely see that happening.
And then lastly, who do you think that they'll ultimately keep on the roster?
That's a tough one. Who do you think? How many backups? But I think we know we'll start with our locks: Becton, Vera Tucker, McGovern, I hesitate to call Van Roten a lock.
He's a lock.
I feel like he is.
He's a, well, even if he doesn't start,
get out of him is the thing. Like, you can,
unless he,
yeah, he's probably
completely sucks, but he's good depth even if he's not going to start.
He's a 99% guy.
Becton, Vera Tucker, McGovern, Van Roten.
Becton, Vera Tucker.
I was just doing it.
Okay. I just want to make it clear that I was involved. I just want to make clear I was involved.
Okay, this is a group effort. This is a group effort. So six guys we have that are locked. How many? Well, first off, how many do you think they keep? I say they keep 10. So that's four other roster spots to compete for between Adoga, Lewis, Feeney, Clark, Hoge, Levin, Hermans, Murray, and Saltes. By the way, two of those guys I had never even heard of before this podcast. So I think we can knock off Saltes and Hermans unless they're amazing. I think Lewis is, I don't want to say a lot. I'll say Lewis makes the team, 7. I think Feeney makes the team as the backup center, 8. I think Clark makes it at 9. And then, we forgot about Connor McDermott. I didn't mention Connor McDermott. I think McDermott makes it over Udoga at 10. Somehow I left him off the depth list.
I would agree with that. The thing is, you have some good versatility here, so you can go lighter if you want, because Feeney can play guard and center. Fant can play either tackle spot. Even Clark, I don't know if they are as confident that he can do it, but he does have tackle experience and projects to guard in the league, so he could do both conceivably. So you could go lighter if you wanted to. I feel like that this is a tough one. I'm not really sure. Udoga has more experience than McDermott, but he also wasn't a Douglas pick, commits a lot of penalties, isn't good at football, which is important. Feeney, I feel like, is going to make it.
Definitely. I think he's the backup center.
Yeah. He's the only guy center experience. He's definitely going to be your backup there. Fant, obviously. Then I guess it's between Lewis, Udoga, Clark, and McDermott. Are you keeping two of those guys or three? This is going to be an interesting one to watch.
I don't think Udoga makes it.
Yeah, let's say Feeney, Fant, Clark, Lewis is your four.
Yeah, Feeney, Fant, Clark, Lewis. Udoga cut. Udoga cut. I think. I guess Clark has tackle experience. I'm just saying you're a little light on the tackle, but I guess you have Fant. Clark has tackle experience. I guess so does Vera Tucker. And you can stash some guys on the offensive line. The guy that we're completely not even talking about is Corey Levin, who at least was a legitimate free agent signing compared to Jimmy Murray and Teton Saltes and those guys. Levin was a guy who's played a little bit.
I'm not going to do the Josh Andrews train this year. I remember talking about Josh Andrews like, oh, he had that one game where he was kind of good against the Colts. That's Corey Levin. He is
against the Steelers. Star. Yeah.
That's what I meant. He was on the Colts. He was playing against the Steelers. I had that in my mind. I don't know why I said Colts, but Corey Levin has one star in his career. It was in 2018. So I'm not going to do that.
How was it? How did he
do? Well, let's look up his grade. I don't know. I'm going to find out right now. It was against the Chargers in 2018, the peak of Sam Darnold's Jets career. I guess you are right, because he did get a fairly decent contract.
Listen to Michael Stahl and multitask. Do you want me to take over here?
Well, he did get a $920,000 contract for the 1 year. I don't think it's guaranteed, though. I don't think he's going to make it.
I could see him making it over Lewis. I think Levin has a legitimate shot to make this roster. So, but I'll give Lewis the edge for now, because I think Lewis has a lot more experience. He seems to be a guy that he was Joe Douglas' first move, if I recall correctly, the trade for Alex Lewis right at the start of the offseason in 2019, or right at the start of training camp in 2018. Overall for this unit, I guess I didn't really give much of my expectations there. Kind of just hopped into who we think they'll keep. I think the run blocking in this unit is going to be very good. I think that is the staple of this Shanahan offense. I should just start calling it a LaFleur offense. They're going to run the football and run play action off of it, and I think they all have the offensive line to do it. I think the Jets will be among the better running offenses. I think not having a top flight running back like a Derrick Henry might limit that a little bit, but didn't really limit the Niners much. I think you're going to see just a complete running back by committee. I think Michael Carter will have a nice season. I think Ty Johnson will have some moments. Tevin Coleman will be used as a receiver. So they have plenty of guys to be able to run an effective running offense. So I think as far as numbers, well, I'll put it this way. They're going to be an above average run blocking unit. I say they crack the top 10. I think they're right at 10 or 9, something around there as far as run blocking. I think pass blocking may be a little lower just because the right side, I'm not necessarily certain, and I don't want to overrate anybody. I could certainly see them having a great pass blocking year as well. I'll put them at middle of the pack, 16th average pass blocking. So overall, that would put them as an above average unit, but still potentially some work, definitely some work to do at right tackle. Moses is a bit older. Fant's probably not your long-term solution. Definitely some work at right guard and maybe even at center. So there's this offensive line is still under construction, but I'm very confident in the left tackle and left guard of the future. And hell, maybe the center. We'll see how he performs this year. Michael, do you have Corey Levin's grade, or should we wrap this up?
I do. So against the Chargers in week 7, 2018, he had a 50.3 overall game, which is pretty bad. 63.1 run blocking, 15.1 pass.
Whoa.
He had one penalty, four pressures given up. He actually played the second most snaps of his career was against the Jets in that game in 2018. 37 snaps he came in at center and played, and he didn't give up any pressures. So there you go. Actually, he gave up one, but he had a good grade in that game. So that's interesting.
Well, there you have it. I think Lewis makes it over him, but certainly something to keep an eye out for. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can follow us at CYJPod on Twitter. You can follow Michael at Michael_Nania. You can follow myself at Ben W. Blessington. You can find this podcast at JetsXFactor.com. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Subscribe to the Jets X Factor YouTube. That'll do it for us. We'll be back on Monday with an episode on the quarterbacks. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great week.
6 seconds. Carr going down again. And it's Quinnen Williams this time for the Jets.
Toward the middle in the air. Picked off. Brian Poole to the end zone. Touchdown.
Hunter the beat. And the punter brings him down. Brayden Mann saved a touchdown, most likely.
Looks right. Fires a bomb down the right sideline again for Mims. What a catch by Denzel Mims.